This is Gary Parrish from CBS Sports. It's now Wednesday, December 16th, and this is the Eye on College Basketball podcast. I'm joined by Matt Norlander and by Sam Bassini. And the big news, of course, is that late Tuesday night after a win over Texas A&M Corpus Christi, Bo Ryan, the Hall of Fame caliber coach at Wisconsin, abruptly announced his retirement. Greg Gard is taking over on an interim basis. The timing, as I wrote at CBSSports.com, is obviously interesting and undeniably tied to the fact that Wisconsin athletic director Barry Alvarez was never on board with what Bo Ryan wanted to happen upon retirement, which is Greg Gard just be his successor, automatic coach in waiting, similar to what Mike Hopkins is to Jim Boeheim at Syracuse, to what Tim Jankovic is at SMU to Larry Brown, to what isn't a terribly unique thing in college basketball. But Alvarez was never on board. So if Bo Ryan were ever to retire at a normal time, like after a season, then Barry Alvarez was determined to just open up the coaching search however he wanted, but not necessarily give it to Greg Gard. This move by Bo forces Alvarez's hand a little bit. At the very least, he's got to let Gard coach this team for the rest of this season, which is what's going to happen. And I guess the hope from Bo's perspective is that Greg is able to prove worthy of that chair, of that position. And so here we are. But it is fascinating, and it turned an otherwise uneventful night in college basketball into a big night in college basketball. Matt Norlander, where were you when you heard the news? Bo Ryan will never coach a college basketball game again.
I'll be honest. I had closed up my laptop, was catching up on an episode of Homeland. My son was being plenty fussy. And then I get a text from Parrish, and it says, I'll take Bo Ryan. And I'm like, what does that mean? He'll take Bo Ryan. Did Wisconsin play tonight? What happened? So I bring up Twitter on my phone. I see about 40 tweets that Bo Ryan has announced he's retired. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me right now. It's 11:45 at night and Bo Ryan's just up and retiring right now. I won't soon forget it, because then I had to send in a video, because then he scrambled the Jets, obviously. Just a huge, huge headline. And we needed someone to send some sort of video component. So my wife's trying to get some sleep upstairs. My kid is crying his head off. I will fully admit this was the first time that I was outright rattled and frustrated, because I must have done a dozen takes on the phone trying to just recap this whole thing and set up the search and explain who Greg Gard is. And meanwhile, like half of them I'd be going into, and then you hear,
That's what babies do, man. They mess your whole life up.
It was crazy. So I don't think I'll ever forget the night Bo Ryan retired, just because it got ridiculous. And plus, on a side note, it's like 65 degrees on the East Coast in December. And so my house, like, I'm not turning on the AC. We don't need the heat on. So this is all happening. I'm like sweating. I'm like drenched. It's brutal. Just a crazy, crazy night. As for Bo, listen, there are a lot of things that I think we should touch on this podcast. One, a lot of people are really, really anxious, eager, and giddy to call this guy a quitter. I think we should address that aspect to him retiring, because this is his worst team that he's had at Wisconsin. And for him to leave midseason, obviously people are throwing a lot of shade Bo Ryan's way. None of the media members, I've seen and heard plenty about how no one's really killing Bo for this. And we can get into his legacy and his stats and whatever, but I'll set it up like this, basically. Ryan definitely does deserve some criticism, I think, in a couple of ways here, but I'm not eager to do that just yet, because, you know, I was in contact with someone who is connected to the program, and I said, you know, wow, you know, kind of crazy. I hope his health is okay. And the response I got back was, he's ... all right. So it's an interesting situation, because, you know, it's his health. Like, he has every right to his own privacy in that regard, but the more that he refrains from letting us know about certain aspects of it, the more the public opinion might just push back on him to a certain degree. The same way it did, obviously, a couple months back when Steve Spurrier, who just flat out admitted, it was a different situation, that Spurrier was like, I woke up and I realized I don't have the passion, want, or wherewithal to do this job anymore. So I'm going to be fair to the team and step away. With Bo, it's clearly not the same. I think he is deserving of some criticism, but there also is the element that, Gard and his father died and his father had cancer, and Bo kind of wanted to retire in May and he got pushed off of that. I think that's a legitimate aspect to it as well, but I think maybe there could be some other personal factors playing here as well that we might not be fully aware of. So while criticism I think is warranted in some degree, I think we should be a little careful at throwing too many barbs Bo's way.
Sam, should Bo Ryan be criticized for walking out on December 15th at the end of essentially the first semester of this season?
Let's also preface this in what Matt said. I mean, if he's not healthy, then that totally complicates matters, and that should be mentioned at least whenever I say this. I mean, I think he deserves a little bit of criticism for walking out. I mean, it's not great. It doesn't seem like the players were necessarily in on this decision, right? Like from, even last week, it seems like he went in and told them last night, right?
Yeah, no, they listen.
Because, I was here's where I was when the whole Bo Ryan thing went down. I was in my car. I got out of my car, and it was I was driving back from UCLA because I went to the UCLA Louisiana Lafayette game last night. And I was in my car, and then I get home, and I see just a train wreck. Like, the video had already
been posted.
You were out of
pocket for 40 minutes. I was like, my God, where's Sam right now? I knew you were driving back, but yeah.
Listen, yeah, here's the deal. People didn't know this was coming. Like, our buddy Jeff Goodman tweeted this morning, Bo Ryan retired last night. No surprise. Like, what are you talking about, no surprise? First off, if it's not surprising, show me the tweet at any point over the past month where you suggested Bo Ryan might retire midseason. It doesn't exist. Secondly, anytime anybody retires at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday night, that is a surprise by definition, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the way it usually goes is like Steve Spurrier, they called a press conference in the middle of the afternoon and he announced his retirement.
Yeah.
Like, when you retire after a win over Texas, when you are a Hall of Fame level coach who retires after a Tuesday night win over Texas A&M Corpus Christi at close to midnight Eastern?
Finals week. I mean, it was.
What are you talking about? It's clearly a surprise. And I think a lot of people, former players, former assistants, friends, were caught off guard by this.
Yeah. So here's what I'll say about the question that you asked me as far as this. I think that it's a little bit different than the Spurrier situation because it kind of seems like he wanted to go this offseason, right? Like, he releases that statement I'm going to coach this year, and then that's probably going to be it, basically. And I didn't really believe it would be it at the time, but apparently I was so far off on that. And, you heard all of the things around the program saying, he might not want to be there, just coming into the season. I never in a million years expected him to leave. But at the same time, if his heart's not really in it necessarily at this point, I don't know that I'm going to, kill Bo Ryan for doing this. I'll say that, he should have done it probably in a more professional and better manner and not just kind of blindsided his team with this. I think that he deserves some criticism there. But, if his heart's not totally in it, then I'm fine with just saying that's fine. You should probably go and hand it off to Greg Gard and see where the program can go from here.
Parrish, let me set you up with two quickies here. One, okay, people are definitely of the belief, a lot of people are, that if Wisconsin was a top 25 team, this wouldn't be the situation. So if Wisconsin was 10-2 right now, do you think that Bo Ryan would still be the coach? And also, regarding the criticism with Ryan, you had a tweet that last night that was like, I can't deny this is kind of funny to watch Barry Alvarez sit there and kind of have to take this from Bo Ryan because, and I'll let you vamp on this, but there definitely is an interesting dynamic there because Bo Ryan, without a doubt, is a guy that when he's in a room feels like he's one of the smartest guys in the room. And I wouldn't even say that's necessarily to his detriment whatsoever. Alvarez is exactly the same way. Without a doubt, he's one of the most dogmatic athletic directors out there. So I say all that to set you up with this, GP, is what Bo Ryan did here, which was clearly a power play to go around Alvarez to stick up for his friend. I've seen a lot of people praise Bo Ryan for this move to ensure that Greg Gard, who's been his assistant for more than two decades, gets a shot. I actually don't even know where I necessarily stand with that. That, you know, okay, he's so loyal to his buddy, and he did it this way to make sure that Guard got the look that he thinks he deserves. In some ways, I think it's a really great move. In other ways, I'm thinking, you know, that's also not the most professional thing to do.
I got a lot of thoughts on this. I think it's a completely fair and reasonable question to ask. If they were 10-2 right now, would he have done this? Like, I don't think he's purely motivated by bailing on a season gone wrong. I think Spurrier was mostly motivated by that. There's not a doubt in my mind, if Spurrier would have had a top five team off to a great start, he ain't walking away right before a Vanderbilt game or whatever it was. I think he realized that my team stinks and we're not going to get better. And then I'm not coming back next year no matter what. So what's the point? And Spurrier bailed. I think Spurrier bailed strictly because a season that he hoped would be a get it back on track season was undeniably not going to be that. It wasn't that, and there was no evidence that it was going to get turned that direction. And so you're walking at the end of the year. Let's just walk right now. You know, Spurrier wasn't trying to set up his successor. He wasn't trying to get his buddy the head coaching job or force it on anybody. He just walked. In a larger sense, I would say this. I don't even mind that. Like, when you decide you don't want to do the job anymore, like, what's wrong with not doing the job anymore? If we want to set, like, coaches get fired all the time midseason, players transfer midseason. So, like, why are this is my go-to on all these sorts of issues. If it's okay for one set of people, why is it not okay for the other? Why do we hold coaches to standards we don't hold other people to? If a player transfers midseason, it's like, hey, you know, he wanted to go. What are you going to do? If a school wants to fire a coach midseason, it's like, hey, they want to get a jump start on whatever. Well, if a coach wants to leave midseason, like, it doesn't bother me. I'm never offended by it. But I do think the Spurrier situation and the Ryan situation are vastly different because I think Bo's trying to make a power play here, and Spurrier just wanted to go play golf and not lose football.
Play ethically wrong.
Here's what I would say. I get both sides of this. I know I'm supposed to be on one side or the other. I can understand Barry Alvarez's perspective here, and I can understand Bo Ryan's perspective here. First, Bo wanted to name his successor. I imagine he thinks that everything he's done for that school, everything he's meant for that school, and the way Greg has stood beside him and been a very important part to the success of that program, that he believes Greg deserves a shot to be the next head coach at Wisconsin. I think he believes Greg will be good, and I think he believes Greg deserves it. So publicly stating that, you know, this past offseason, I think in Bo's mind, he probably just thought that the conversation would be pretty simple. Like, hey, I'm going to coach one more season, then I'm going to get out of here. By then, Greg's personal life, you know, specifically the awful and tragic situation with his father, will be not behind him. I don't think that kind of thing ever gets behind you, but you know what I mean. You won't be in the middle of it anymore. And then it'll be a seamless transition, and I'll retire and I'll come to the games and sit on the front row and watch my protege lead this program to great times. And the issue, of course, is that Barry Alvarez wasn't going for that. And so if you're Bo Ryan, are you pissed? Like, I'm Bo Ryan. Everything. I've been to back-to-back Final Fours. I've been to 14 straight NCAA tournaments, and I'm not allowed to have influence over who replaces me at Wisconsin. Get out of here. So if you're Bo Ryan, you're pissed, right? I understand that. But what if you're Barry Alvarez? Here's where I actually can – I think this is an interesting conversation. Why is he obligated to let Bo Ryan do that if he doesn't think it's in the best interest of his athletic department? Like, Barry Alvarez runs that athletic department, for better or worse. I don't know if he's good at his job. There's a lot of evidence to suggest he might not be, some of which is that he keeps losing football coaches to comparable right. jobs, right? Why do those guys keep leaving Barry Alvarez? I think that's an interesting dynamic. But for better or worse, Barry is the athletic director there. It's his job to do what's best, what he thinks is best for the athletic department. And if he thinks, you know what, I want to make a run at – I don't want to guarantee Greg Gard be Bo Ryan's successor. I want to make a run at Tony Bennett. I want to make a run at Archie Miller. I might really like Ben Jacobson. Like, if he thinks on some level he can make a run at somebody he thinks is clearly better for the job, why would he commit to Greg Gard? Like, I can understand that. Now, let me take you to the other side. once Barry Alvarez digs his heels in and says, you know, like, Greg will be considered, but I'm not going to promise him or you that he'll be the successor. Then Bo gets pissed, and that's when he starts talking about, I don't know, if I never really said I'm going to retire, which was BS. Of course he did. And you know, I don't know when I'm going to. And then you get in the middle of the season where you force Barry Alvarez's hand. You say, hey, listen, you might not give Greg Gard the job at, you know, full time, but he's going to coach this Big Ten schedule, and maybe he'll do enough to impress you. Maybe he'll do so much you can't possibly not give him the job full time. A little bit like Clay Helton at USC. Like, if Clay Helton isn't the interim coach at USC, he never gets the head coaching job at USC. Mm-hmm. He only got that because he did enough when he was in that chair the remainder of the season to prove himself worthy in his athletic director's eyes. And so I think if you're Bo Ryan, you're hoping this goes similarly, right? So I can understand why Bo did what he did. But here's the thing. I can also understand why Barry Alvarez might not want to commit to Greg Gard. Like, I like Greg. I think he'd be good. But if you're Barry Alvarez and you think you can maybe make a run at Tony Bennett, wouldn't it be foolish to commit to Greg Gard?
It absolutely would, in my opinion. And it's too much of an unknown. And Bo Ryan definitely pulled Jim Calhoun here. Calhoun got injured in a bike race and abruptly retired shortly before the start of the season 3 years back. And with that, the guy that Calhoun had been pushing for, like Ryan, for a long time, Kevin Ollie, was forced into an interim position, and then UConn ended up thriving under Ollie, where, you know, the national championship came and all that stuff. To expect similar from Wisconsin, obviously, would be a little silly, but it's definitely a really intriguing situation overall, because Wisconsin is a really good program now, and it's basically that because let's be honest. It's 10% of what Dick Bennett did. Like, Wisconsin was nothing before Dick Bennett got there, and then he had some success with them. But 90% of it's what Bo Ryan did over the past decade and a half. And it's also interesting just to see in the wake of this retirement. You know, it's not like Bo was at. It feels like Bo was at Wisconsin for four decades. He wasn't. He wasn't even there at the turn of the century. Okay, but what he did, they never missed the tournament. Every freaking year he went there, top four in the Big Ten. Every single season. So now the question becomes, okay, what is Wisconsin as a program on a national level? You know, we always get into this discussion, and I always find it interesting. What are you a top 20? What difference between the program and the job? Is Wisconsin a top 15 job in the country? I don't think that you can say that. Can it be a top 15 program? Well, maybe it's a fringe top 15 program with Bo, but honestly, without him, we don't know the answer to that. Barry Alvarez clearly believes that it can be, but that's also going to be indicative of the kind of coach that you can bring in. And it doesn't necessarily have to be Donnie Bennett, in my opinion. Yes, he should be the number one target. I'm saying right now that that does not happen. I do not think Tony Bennett will leave a position where he has established his own identity and his own program at Virginia to the point where he's winning ACC regular season championships in the most stacked league in the country, top to bottom, in my opinion. For him to leave that to follow Bo, I'm not saying it won't happen. We've definitely had situations where coaches have left one job for another that would seem lateral, and to me that's a lateral move, and maybe you can even argue that it's a slight downgrade. I don't think it'll happen, but my point is, just because, you know, they might not be able to get a Tony Bennett, it doesn't mean that Wisconsin isn't necessarily a top 20 program or can't be that if you get someone like Ben Jacobson. To me, Bryce Drew would be an amazing hire if that kind of situation presents itself at the end of the year, which I think that it might. So the situation Wisconsin has going forward over the next 12 weeks is super interesting to me, because it's a matter of how will they do with Gard. You've seen that they've been just so average and bizarrely non-Bo-like this season, right? So we have a baseline of expectation for what Wisconsin has been this year and what it could project to be. So if Gard does enough to get an NCAA tournament berth, you know, will that be enough to have him keep the job? I don't even necessarily know if you can say that. I think it's going to be super intriguing, and I don't know what candidates might be out there that Wisconsin will lure in. Gary Parrish has seven names up there on the site right now, but
here's what I would say.
This thing has just turned college basketball.
Here's what I would say to all that. One, I think it's insane to commit to anybody based on whether they do something over the next 3 months with a basketball team or not. Like, if you're Barry Alvarez, and let me be very clear, Barry Alvarez might not have any idea what he's doing. okay? Like, he just might be completely ignorant when it comes to, like, basketball and hiring a basketball coach. So I preface everything I'm saying with Barry Alvarez might not have any idea what's going on or what the right move to do. But to me, this is pretty simple if you're Barry Alvarez. If you think you can hire somebody better than Greg Gard, you should. If you don't, you shouldn't. But it shouldn't be dictated by, I was going to go after Tony Bennett and maybe could have got Tony Bennett, but Greg took this team to the round of 32, so we're going to go with Greg. Like, that would be dumb.
That's stupid. But that's what happens sometimes.
I know, and it's stupid every time, every single time. Like, when I hear sometimes athletic directors, they don't say this, but it'll be sources close to the program. Athletic directors will say, well, you know, if so-and-so makes it to the NCAA tournament, he'll keep his job. But if not, we're going to fire him. Okay, so, like, what happens if a kid breaks his foot? You're going to hit – okay, coach was on his way to the NCAA tournament, so you were going to keep him. Kid breaks his foot, so they missed the tournament. Now you're deciding whether to keep your coach or fire him based on a broken foot? Like, what are you talking about? Like, you either think somebody's the right guy for the job or you don't. And that's a decision Barry Alvarez has got to make. And again, he might not make the right decision, but, like, in my eyes, it should never hinge on what happens over the next 3 months. You either believe – now, it can hinge on, wow, I didn't realize Greg Gard was this sharp, but he is. I want him. I didn't want him before, but I want him now. If that's what happens, but based on a certain number of wins or – a certain finish in the Big Ten, that would be silly to decide the next, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years of your program based off something like that. That would be incredibly short-sighted. Let me ask you this.
Hold on real quick. It's a little bit scary that we have to preface that, you know, Barry Alvarez might not know how good of a coach Greg Gard is. Like, if he was impressed by Greg Gard, you know, like, over the next 3 months, whenever Barry Alvarez has been the athletic director there for 11 years, and right, he doesn't have a good feel for Greg Gard yet, that would be pretty scary.
I agree completely. I'm just saying, I would never tie a permanent hire to, you know, if he beats Minnesota on February 23rd, right, you know, like, that. I just think that's crazy. Here's what my question for you, Sam: is pursuing Tony Bennett a massive waste of time?
Probably. I mean, he has a pretty big buyout. He, if you're Wisconsin, I mean, Bo Ryan wasn't making a ton of money, right? Like, do you know that number off the top of your head?
I want to say it was like 2.1.
Yeah, like that's about what Tony Bennett's making now.
I might be making that up. I think that's
around what I thought it was too, what I thought I read last night. So that's probably right around.
Sam, I'll let you continue. I'll interject here. I know that they've stepped up more in recent years, but until recently, Wisconsin had the lowest basketball budget in the league as well, and those things definitely matter to coaches. Sure. I don't think it's that anymore, and it's certainly not at the top, but, you know, just another factor.
Yeah, so here's the thing. You're going to have to go out and, you know, by the time this whole thing gets done, because, you know, Tony will get an offer from Virginia probably at, like, because he's making right around 2 right now as well. You'll probably get an offer from Virginia to get to, like, 2.7 or so. So you're talking about paying, like, $3 to $3.5 million for a basketball coach with one of the lowest budgets in the Big Ten for basketball. Plus the buyout on top of that. I don't know how much that's going to work, right? So it probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, you should obviously offer them and, you know, see where that goes, but it's probably going to be a fruitless endeavor, right?
You know what? Listen, if you put gun to head and I've got a pick, Tony Bennett's going to be coaching Wisconsin this time next year or not, I would say no, right? He's got it really rolling at Virginia, back-to-back ACC regular season
title. Don't forget they also have a top-10 recruiting class coming in.
Right. They got a top-10 team right now and a top-10 recruiting class coming. Austin Nichols will be eligible next year. Like, he's got it in a pretty good place. That said, you can never, ever, ever discount the power of home. And that is the only reason this makes sense. Like, Matt, when you were talking earlier about, you know, it's a lateral move, clearly a lateral move, and perhaps a downgrade. But, like, it's home, and home matters to some people. I cannot tell you exactly how much it matters to Tony. But people in all walks of life, in all types of careers, live in a place they call home, even if it doesn't make the best professional sense for them. And so how much is it – does it matter to him whether – because his parents still live in Wisconsin, all right? Does it matter to him – and I'm not saying it does. I'm just saying these are the types of things that actually do matter to some people. Does it matter to him to have his kids grow up around their grandparents? Like, is that something that's important? Does he have a draw? Does he want to be around his father and mother in the latter years of their life? Does that matter to him? Mm-hmm. Like personally speaking, there are a whole bunch of places better for me to live for my career than where I live. How much easier would my life be, and possibly like career be, if I lived in New York? Like, for 4 months out of the year, I have to fly from Memphis to Atlanta, Atlanta to New York, then New York back to Atlanta, and Atlanta to Memphis every single week. Like, that's a pain in the ass. Plus, it costs a lot of money for CBS. Like, it would probably be beneficial for CBS for my career, and certainly for, like, travel time purposes to live in New York or to live anywhere with a major airport, because the Memphis airport isn't that anymore. Like, even if I could get direct flights, it would be beneficial. But I live where I live because I'm from here, because my wife's from here, because her parents are here, my parents are here, my brother's here, her brothers are here. We like the idea of having family help, given how much I work. We like the idea of our children growing up around their grandparents. Like, that's very important. It matters to us. And so I've made at least a decision partially rooted in where I live, based on, this is home. This is where I was raised, and this is where almost all of my family lives. And I don't know if that matters to Tony Bennett, but if it did matter to him, he wouldn't be the first person to be influenced by the pull of home. And so that's the only reason. And that's something Barry Alvarez, frankly, has to figure out. Like, and that's something you could figure out tomorrow, frankly. Yep. You know, like, you know, you don't have to wait till Virginia season's over to figure that out. Like, that's something you can try to figure out, like, yesterday. Hey, Tony, would you even be interested in this? You know, is this something – I don't want to waste your time or mine, but does home matter to you? Does being the head coach at Wisconsin, living back in Wisconsin, does that matter to you? If it does, let's try to make it happen. If it doesn't, I understand. So I guess to bottom line it, I think Tony Bennett's going to stay at Virginia. There's a whole bunch of basketball reasons to stay at Virginia. But I don't know if those things I'm referencing matter to him. And if they do matter to him, then certainly there's a scenario where he could stand up and say, you know what, I just want to go home. I just want to go to the state of Wisconsin. Bob Huggins made a decision somewhat rooted in this. You know, he was at Kansas State and had a top recruiting class getting ready to enroll, right? There was the Michael Beasley class, the Bill Walker class. Wasn't that class?
Yeah.
Okay, and he just wanted to go home. Like, he had an opportunity to go to West Virginia. He said, I want to go home. And, like, that was the pull. If it would have been another job similar to West Virginia, he'd never move it. He wouldn't have taken a West Virginia-level job, except for West Virginia, and that's because he wanted to go home. And so I just think that's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch, and that's why if I were a Virginia fan, I wouldn't be completely dismissive of Wisconsin, because you probably don't have a good sense for what matters and does not matter to Tony Bennett and his family.
And I'll say, regarding Wisconsin and its fan base and who's going to come, I think the coach that winds up there next season, you'll end up feeling generally pretty good about it, because it'll either be guard, and if it's guard, you know, it's Bo's guy, he'll have had enough success this season to kind of validate going with him going forward. If it's the absolute home run hire and Tony Bennett, that goes without saying. But to me, there are enough really solid candidates out there that even if it's not the ideal first pick or second pick, if it's the 3 or 4 guy, you're still going to get someone talented enough, whether it be a Ben Jacobson, mm-hmm. a Bryce Drew, or whatever. To me, there is a very good crop of established current sitting head coaches around college basketball that Wisconsin is going to lure in a guy. To me, this seems fail-proof in terms of having a bust of a hire for Wisconsin.
I agree with that. Here's why. You like, listen, perfect world, you get Tony Bennett. That's awesome, right? Like, that's awesome. Okay, Tony decides he ain't leaving Virginia in top 10 recruiting class, top 10 team, all that stuff. Fine. Then you can hire Greg Gard. Like, maybe that makes sense. Perhaps you turn to Ben Jacobson. Like, Ben's great. I think most people think Ben's really, really good. The one that's interesting, and I have a list of 7 candidates over at CBSSports.com right now, Wayne Tinkle.
That's the one I wanted to bring up. That's a really good one.
Okay, born in Milwaukee, took Montana to 3 NCAA tournaments. He's doing good things at Oregon State. Here's the key, though. Like, not the key, but the other thing that should be considered. Little Tinkle is really good, and Little Thompson, who's his assistant son, is really good.
We really can't call him Little Tinkle, by the way.
Little Tinkle. Yes, we can, and yes, we will.
Did I just nickname him Little Tinkle?
That's right.
So you hire Wayne Tinkle. He brings his staff. You get Little Tinkle, Little Thompson, and the rebuild is like, you got two kids. You're ready to go. You know, like those are two good players, young players.
Yeah,
Little Tinkle.
Like, yeah, I agree though. That's a really interesting idea. I think that would, I mean, assuming that Tony Bennett would turn that down, that might be the next place I turn, even over Ben Jacobson, who I think is an awesome, awesome coach who's incredibly underrated around the country. That's a really just a home run to me if he can bring along all of that.
Right. No, it makes sense. So, this will be one of the more interesting hires to see if they're successful trying to lure Tony Bennett, to see if Greg can do enough to convince Barry Alvarez he's worthy of the job on a full-time basis. And if the answer to both of those is no and no, then where do they turn after that? Is it Wayne Tinkle? Is it Ben Jacobson? Is it Bryce Drew? But again, I know that just to bottom line it, put a period on this and we'll move on. I get why – if I were Bo Ryan, I'd be pissed that Barry Alvarez wouldn't go along with my plan. But if I'm Barry Alvarez, as much as I like Greg, I'm not sure I would go along with that plan either. Like, once upon a time, you hire who Eddie Sutton wants you to hire to replace him just because it's Eddie Sutton. You know, it's Eddie Sutton court. If Eddie wants his kid to be the coach, then Sean's going to be the coach. Same thing at Texas Tech, right? Bob Knight walks away midseason. You're you feel compelled for whatever reason to hire Pat Knight. Didn't work. Like this whole let the coach name his successor thing, it ain't foolproof, you know? Right. And it has been a colossal failure in multiple places. And if you're Barry Alvarez and you A, don't believe that Guard's the best candidate you could hire, or B, that you could actually make a run at Tony Bennett, I don't blame him as much as I like Bo, and as much as I would be furious if I were Bo, I don't blame Barry Alvarez at all. If for not committing to Greg on Bo Ryan's timetable. It actually makes sense to me. Hey, Sam, UCLA screwed up my drunk bet last night, by the way. Two rotation players out. How did you let that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what I can do. That was a surprise to UCLA, too, by the way, that Thomas Walsh was going to be out. They prepped all week for Sean Long and Louisiana Lafayette with Thomas Walsh in the lineup, and, Welsh probably guarding Long for a good amount of the time. And then Sean Long went off for 26-16 against Tony Parker and a pretty weak front line beyond Parker. So that was fun. Yeah, that was a fun game last night.
But they have won five straight. They're ranked in the top 25. It does look like Steve's got that headed in the right direction, and I will see them, as will Norlander, this weekend in Brooklyn. We will talk about that on a later podcast.
Yeah, I meantime, see them enough, so I'm fine.
Yeah, I know, right? You basically
you need to explain how you don't have Monmouth in your top 25 right now.
Why? Like, I don't even know that I need to explain that. You want me to? But I will if you want me to. Really?
Yeah, man.
Can you explain the argument for them over Valparaiso?
I'll set it up like this.
I'll set it up like this. You let me set this up, Norlander.
Okay, you set it up.
With three losses to unranked teams, they're 54th in KenPom. What are you even talking about?
I would counter that with that their wins – listen, there's definitely a case not to rank them.
Yeah, I just made it.
But the case to rank them is if you stop the season right now, okay, and let's just live in a hypothetical world for the next couple of minutes and enjoy ourselves. If you stopped the season right now and created an NCAA tournament field, there's basically no case against putting Monmouth anything below a 5 seed with what they've accomplished and the teams that they've beaten. The fact that they have two road wins against KenPom top 50 teams. The only other team in the country that can claim that is Valparaiso. They've beaten four KenPom top 40 teams. The only other team that can say that is Xavier. So the wins are impressive enough where, they have a loss to USC, but guess what? They also beat USC. They only lost by 3 to Dayton. The Canisius loss obviously is the one that sticks out. It's not a great loss, but it did come on the road. I'm just saying, at this point in the season, it's not the most outlandish thing to strongly consider putting Monmouth around 24 or 25 in a poll.
Given what they've done. Do losses matter anymore?
That's what I you sound like. You sound like a fan of a team that's got bad losses. I get this. Like,
would you? Okay, so hold on. You'd rather weigh losses more heavily over the fact that they have an impressive collection of wins right now.
It's not weighing them more heavily. It's weighing
thank
them
you,
equally.
Sam. Thank you, Sam. I weigh it all.
I'm not saying that you're wrong. Like, Monmouth's Monmouth would be an at-large team right now, no doubt. But
okay,
they so lost to the 168th ranked team in KenPom. Like, Canisius is bad.
So my 26th team right now is Gonzaga, right? So let's compare them to Gonzaga, Monmouth to Gonzaga. They're both 7-3, all right? So they played the same number of games. They got the same number of wins. I actually agree. Monmouth has better wins, probably. I mean, Gonzaga's got a Connecticut win.
There's no probably about it. They absolutely do.
Okay, I agree with that. Okay, they got a Washington win. They got two top 100s, two top 85 wins. The losses are all inside the top 40. Texas A&M by a point on a neutral, to Arizona by five, to UCLA by five. That's three losses to three ranked teams, whereas Monmouth's got two losses to unranked teams. So it just comes to, like, what do you want to focus on?
I would argue, yes, okay. And by the way, I'm not like, you know, rank them, don't rank them, whatever. I just think I wanted to bring it up because I think it's an interesting topic. In my opinion,
I do love that bench. I'll tell you that.
A bench is amazing, without a doubt. Those dudes are bringing it, and like, they're legit. We've reached the point where it's not just the bench, the team on the court. Like, they're balling out. They freaking ran Georgetown off the court last night. It was outright, it's crazy impressive what they did against Georgetown, and the Hoyas clearly aren't as good as we thought they were. But in my opinion, if you did not have Gonzaga, like, if you remove the notion of preseason rankings and all that stuff, and Gonzaga had played the way it had played without the idea that they were a top 10 preseason team, you probably wouldn't have Gonzaga ranked right now.
I don't disagree with that.
I think that's fine, but Gonzaga's still without their, you know, maybe most important player. Two of those losses came without
their
most important
player. So hold on, GP, who do you have, like, 25 UCLA?
25 is UCLA.
Which I have no beef with that whatsoever, because they've got some really nice
wins.
Really nice wins in there. Now, they have lost to Monmouth. Let's remember that.
I do remember that. They did. But they've got a loss to Monmouth. They got a loss to Wake Forest.
Wake Forest is not a terrific team. They're not bad by any means, but they're not great.
They got a UNLV win, they got a Kentucky win, they got a Gonzaga win.
I would say their wins are barely better than what Monmouth has right now, and if you consider that Monmouth beat them at UCLA, Monmouth has a case. Who's the other team in your top 25?
24, I've got Connecticut.
They're valid.
Yeah, I'll make the case for Connecticut. Here it is.
Don't have the wins that Monmouth has, without a doubt.
No, they do not.
Their losses are better.
They've got a Gonzaga loss. They've got a Maryland loss. Only loss to an unranked team is a Syracuse loss. Syracuse is still a top 45 KenPom team. They got a Michigan win. I don't even know what that means anymore. And everybody has an Ohio State win. They're just one of like 40 teams that's beaten Ohio State this year. So
are you at least seeing a little bit of where I'm coming from?
Oh, yeah. Listen, here's the way I'll put it for you. If on Monday Monmouth is ranked, or, and I know this will be the case, some AP voters have Monmouth on their ballots, I won't use the poll attacks to address that. I got no issue with it. I think I can make a reasonable argument not to rank Monmouth, but if you want to rank them, it's certainly fine with me, and also reasonable. Is that fair?
Yeah, they're super intriguing and awesome and interesting team, because as I wrote last night, which I thought this was going to be like the story for the next 24 hours until Bo Ryan just changed everything, we almost never care about teams from one bid leagues until we get to March. Like, almost never, unless it's some super weird, freaky story with like a player or something crazy, right? But Monmouth, ever since they went on that tear in November, and actually technically since they opened the season with the win over at UCLA, they've made us pay attention. And like last night, going in to play Georgetown, the program was 0-30 all time against the Big East. You know, that's a game that people are going to be watching them, because it was, you know, a very, very slow night in college basketball to Bo and Bo. They come out and they look freaking terrific. Like, it was when I watched them, I didn't feel like, oh, wow, yeah, Monmouth's really cool and cute and they're having a nice game. No, they looked legitimately like a top 25 team the way they played, executed. I mean, they sliced up Georgetown. It was ridiculous. It was that tape will be used by every scouting team that goes against Georgetown the rest of the season. It was fantastic the way that they did it. So I just think it's cool that we got this random team from Jersey that plays in the MAC that is capturing everyone's attention, and rightfully so. Now the bench is freaking awesome. Love those guys. They bring it. They're creative, and now you've got a team that's they're straight up ballers, man. They're really, really good.
Oh, hey, listen, I'm down with you. I don't want to imply that I'm out on Monmouth. I love the team. I love the bench. I got no issue if you rank them. I just think you can reasonably leave them unranked as well. Real quick, let's get out of here, but not until after we do this. Everybody's hurt. Mill Jefferson's hurt. Kennedy Meeks is hurt. Naz Long's hurt. Naz is out for the year. Yeah. Complications from a hip procedure. How big of a deal is that for Iowa State, Sam?
That's a really big deal, I would say, because that's a team that was going seven deep before Naz Long got hurt. They are going to replace Naz Long with Deontay Burton, who is a little bit different of a player than Naz Long, but should replace him in the rotation, should go back to being seven deep. It's just hard for them right now because you were expecting that, you know, going forward into Big 12 play, they were going to get that increased step. They were going to be able to, you know, maybe use their bench a little bit more. Right now, there are only 16 teams in college basketball out of 351 that use their bench less often than Iowa State does. You look at what happens with Monty Morris, George Niang, Jameel McKay. You have to hope those guys don't get broken down by the end of the year at this point. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. Matt Thomas and Hallis Cook have both been pretty good off the bench. They're both shooting really well. They'll replace what Naz Long was bringing because, honestly, Naz Long had been okay this year. You know, he's only shooting 29% from three. Right. It seemed like the hip was really bothering him. But the fact that he was a warm body that knew the system can't be overstated. Year. So it's the biggest one right now, even over Kennedy Meeks, who's out for another week or so.
Right.
And Emil Jefferson, who's out for an indefinite amount of time, sure, but it seems like he'll probably be back relatively more soon, at least. So
let me ask you this about Emil. Clearly they need him. He's experienced. He's been on, right. He's been a rotation player on a national champ. Do they get more talented without him?
Well, what I think is happening right
now.
You
know what I mean, right?
Yeah. They're playing Ingram at the four. They're playing Kennard, Allen, and the guards. Like, is like kind of a smaller unit. I think that this injury kind of helps them develop Brandon Ingram playing at the four. But where I think their best lineup is just Emil playing the five with right. Brandon Ingram at the four. So, you know, they'd be better off with Emil, I would say. But if this lineup gets Ingram a lot more used to playing the four, it could be like kind of an addition by subtraction right now, not full term, not long term over the course of the season, but right now might help a little bit.
Yeah, we will see. Norlander, you ready to go? Are you on babysitting duty again today?
Man, I am, but hey, listen.
You sound so depressed and tired.
No, I'm. Last night I didn't.
I told you I didn't go to bed until
4 a.m. last night.
You're gonna go through depression and you're gonna be tired all the time.
It's fine. It's fine. We actually we had to go to the doctor today. He has lost weight, so we're gonna pump this kid full of formula over the next week and force him to.
You got him on a no carb diet. Is he on Atkins already?
He wanted to go on that paleo, and I'm like, we're not doing that, kid. You're way too young for that. So we gotta just get him up to weight and get that. But no, yes, I am on some babysitting duty, but you know, whatever. I cannot wait to see you on Saturday, GP, and finally get to a game this year. Fortunately, I'm able to get out. We can go enjoy the CBS Sports Classic and hopefully get a decent back-to-back game.
We will be there. That'll be Saturday on CBS, of course. It is UCLA, North Carolina, and Kentucky, Ohio State. So it's at Barclays Center in Brooklyn. You've been to Barclays a million times, haven't you?
Yeah. Have you not been there yet?
No, I've been there. Yeah. I like it.
It's a good. Oh yeah, it's definitely a good spot. What time is the first game?
I don't know. I'll worry about that on Saturday, Norlander. You think I'm
maybe we'll
this
get? Well, I'm getting it. Maybe we'll, you know, we'll write on it, and maybe we'll get a dinner after. Okay.
Would you like to go to dinner with me in Brooklyn on Saturday night?
I think that would be terrific.
I'll take you to dinner on Saturday night in Brooklyn, and then you can take the leftovers home to your kid and try to get him some weight on him.
That's a terrific idea, bud.
Look, I'm full of terrific ideas. Remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast over at iTunes. The quickest way to get your hands on the latest episode. So go do that. Do that for real. And I'm going to talk to you again later on this week. Till then, take care.